This is Talk To Me. Your host, Joshua Toomey, bring you epic rants, anecdotes, and interviews with heavy hitters from hardcore
our new life begins!
To hair metal. This is Talk To Me.
What is up, everybody? Welcome to Talk To Me, episode 266. The guest this week is Christian Machado, formerly of El Nino, now doing a nice solo record. You got to check it out. Coming out September 25th. It's called Hollywood E, Sycamore. It's if you're a huge El Nino fan, it's definitely a departure. If you're a huge El Nino fan, you will still love it because it's Christian's voice, and what a voice he has. So make sure to stick around and check out that interview coming right up. But first, we're going to talk about the Talk To Me t-shirt. We're going to get rid of these t-shirts. We moved them over to the new house. Got larges and extra larges left. The nice skull headphones pizza t-shirt. Very cool. $20 free shipping in the United States. If you are outside the United States, we will discuss shipping options and when we get one out to you. PayPal.me/talktome. Send me your address, your size, $20, and I will get one out to you as soon as I can. Also, thank you to everyone who has been checking out the Talk To Me live episodes. I've been doing those on Tuesday nights, posting the audio here, but you can always head over to YouTube. Make sure you're subscribing to the YouTube channel. You can also go over to YouTube and watch this interview with Christian Machado over on the YouTube. If you like to watch it live and in person or on video, you like to see what I'm doing, what Christian's doing, you can go check that out. And there's actually a part of the interview where you kind of need to check out the YouTube because we talk about a magazine cover that he was on. I pop the magazine cover up. We talk about it while it is on the screen. So it's definitely something you need to check out. So head over to the Talk To Me YouTube page. Subscribe while you're over there. We need to get those numbers up and through the roof. And comment, like, and all that good stuff while you are over there. And speaking of YouTube, this episode, as many episodes of Talk To Me, is brought to you by our good friend down in Atlanta, Georgia. Yes, that is Scott Bowling with the show Good Company with Bowling. Make sure you're checking that out on YouTube and whatnot. And I'll even let Scott tell you about it right now.
Hey guys, my name's Scott Bowling. I have a YouTube show called Good Company with Bowling.
What's up? This is Clint Lowry from 7 Dust.
Hey, what's up? This is Sonny Mayo.
Hey, Ricky Rackman.
And you're watching Good Company with Scott Bowling.
I've interviewed bands like Limp Bizkit, Fozzy, 7 Dust, Korn. I've had Chris Farley's brother, Tom Farley, on the show. My show is kind of like a modern day Wayne's World. If you love a good interview, a good rock interview, or just any kind of interview, please, if you get a chance, check out my show, Good Company with Bowling.
Yeah, guys, head over to Good Company over on YouTube. Let him know in the comments that the Talk To Me podcast sent you. That will be much appreciated. And as always, Scott Bowling is appreciated. What a good dude, and we'll have to get down to Atlanta soon to be on Good Company with Bowling. That'll be a lot of fun. So without any more of my ramblings, let's listen to a track off of... let's listen to a track off of the new album by Christian Machado. It's called Die Alone. And I'll be back with you momentarily after we talk to Christian Machado and check out a classic El Nino track.
That we both should see. Girl, it's not about you.
there's more wrong than there's right. At least we're alive. And there's so many things that a fool won't let go. Instead, now we're dying low. So much pain here, so many lives. This is goodbye.
What's up, everybody? Welcome into Talk To Me. We got Christian on the line. Well, not on the line. I'm used to doing these on the phone.
We're on the stream.
We're just recording right now. We'll post this on Thursday. So we can edit if we talk too bad about too many people, right?
Okay. Or if we give away that, we're recording it on the day before or something.
Exactly. Well, man, I've thoroughly enjoyed the new album, and I'm going to butcher it because I don't speak Spanish, but it's just Hollywood E, Sycamore,
butcher
correct?
Butcher it. Even if you don't like it, butcher it like that. It's fine.
Cha-cha-cha-cha-cha. No, I'm just talking about the name. I'm not talking about butchering the actual album. So it's just Hollywood E, Sycamore, correct?
Hollywood E, Sycamore, yes. Or Hollywood and Sycamore. It's just a cross street. It's a Hollywood cross street where a good friend of mine lives, two good friends of mine live right there, and they helped me, rehearse and get ready for the album, and they recorded on my album with me. So it felt like a cool artsy title. At first I thought, does this album need to have a cool, catchy saying, or like so much of the music was about my personal life. I figured, well, maybe I'll name it like my daughter's names together or something. But then I was like, that's thinking about it too much, It felt Hollywood-y Sycamore. That's where the music came to be, and it just felt like a artsy, original, genuine thing to do.
Now, kind of coming from the nu metal heavy world and kind of transitioning into this type of stuff, man, how is that for you, kind of just branching out into something new, so new?
It's exciting musically. It's creatively exhilarating for sure. From a take into consideration everything I've done before, it's a little nerve-wracking, I ain't gonna lie. It's a complete, not a complete 180, but for sure I'm presenting something that's 180 degrees from where people might have heard me before. Everything's a lot more stripped down, even though like Die Alone is a really stripped down song. There are some songs that have like drums on them and stuff, but there's no distortion on the guitars.
Yeah.
I'm not screaming, it isn't headbanging music. This is like vibe feel music, This is therapy music, if you will. And heavy music can be that as well.
Oh, absolutely. How light this album is, this is something you could do in jazz clubs. You could do this type of music for the rest of your life, and not have to scream and yell and headbang. Is this kind of just a turn in your career, or is this just a kind of a side thing and the heavy album's coming next type stuff?
No, I think it's something that I'm going to focus on, for as long as I can. I feel it's a very genuine side of me, that's always been there. I've always been a songwriter. I've always written on acoustic guitar, although in El Nino, I would take my songs to the band and we'd make them electric and things like that. And we did that on purpose. But purposely on this material, I'm leaving songs, just chord progressions, acoustic guitar, focusing on the vocal. And it would be cool for me to be able to do this, you know? I mean, it's not something that I want to force on my fans. If they don't like it, they don't like it, and I won't force it on them. But, you know, if they dig it and the response I've been getting has been amazing, you know, will it be forever? I don't know. I mean, I'm not the kind of guy to ever dictate, you know, anytime I'm ever posed a question, what are you going to do 5 years from now, 10 years from now? I'm like, I don't know. You know, in 2015, if somebody would have asked us, what are you going to do in 2020? Anything you would have answered would have been thrown out the window, dude.
Yeah, wearing masks and going to drive-ins to watch Metallica on the big screen was not in the cards.
yeah, man. Isn't that interesting? Well, you know what? If you get a real PA at the drive-in, then I'm in.
Yeah.
I'm okay watching it on the big screen at a drive-in as long as the PA is real and it sounds real.
I heard a couple of shows, a couple of other podcasts that of dudes that went to the Metallica live show or the Metallica drive-in show, and they all came away saying it was a fun event. It was getting out of the house. You know, everyone, it was coming through everyone's car speakers and through a PA. So it was kind of coming from all around you. Everybody said they were having a good time.
That's an interesting approach to it, you know.
Yeah,
get it through your car speakers as well. That's cool.
So, in my knowledge of El Nino, you came into El Nino as the bass player, and then you switched over to being the vocalist. So, were you someone that always knew they could sing, or did you develop a voice over the years?
I had screamed in bands before, for sure. And I had sang here and there in other bands. When we first put El Nino together, the band that I had come from, I played bass and sang. And I'm not sure if that, you know, attracted musicians to me from the scene. I don't know. I don't know what it was, but it might have been cool to see a bass player that sings. And, you know, I was a pretty rowdy musician and I took pride in being awesome at my instrument, at least the bass. You know, when I became a vocalist, it was like, oh, this is, whoa, I didn't expect to, you know, get a record deal as a vocalist. This is going to be challenging, you know, but it's something that I always did. I sang in death metal bands, you know, and the band that I was in before El Nino was, I know, like a modern alternative metal band. And, you know, I was on to trying different things already. You know, I've always been a music slut, if you will. You know, I love all kinds of music. I don't, you know, I'm not prejudiced to any one style. If a track is really, really awesome, I'm about listening to it, giving it a chance.
Oh yeah, absolutely. The one thing about listening to Hollywood E Sycamore was the fact that I think that if you play this around anyone else's lady, like they're your lady now. Like it was, you know, I was like, every time you would dip into that Spanish, and I was like, my wife's gone. She's not Christian.
No, you could dedicate the song to her, man. She'll feel the emotion through you.
Yeah. We'll see about that. You know, is this type of music stuff you've done, you know, just on the side at the house, acoustic guitar around the house for years, or is this just an entirely new venture?
Well, when I was in the early years, when I was the main songwriter in El Nino, really, I wrote songs on acoustic. That's how I wrote a lot of the songs that you hear on the first two albums were written on acoustic guitar, just messing around, mostly chord progressions. That's why El Nino, in the first couple of albums, it was just, you know, very simple riffs and chord progressions basically is what dictated the style of at least the melodic approach to the guitars at the point. But it's always been a simplistic musical approach for me, you know, writing on acoustic guitar, thinking of a melody. This is not something that's strange to me. I've done it on almost every single El Nino album. It's just that on the first two albums, I wrote more of the music. And then as we changed band members, you know, we became more like a group writing thing. But I always tried to apply it here and there when I could. On some albums, I did it less than others and things like that. But I don't remember a time going back. I mean, it was acoustic guitar was like one of my first instruments. My mom taught me how to play acoustic guitar when I was in my teens. And then I kind of took drums seriously and I didn't get as good as I wanted to. So I moved to guitar again and then bass. And, you know, it was something different instruments are something that I always played around with. And I guess maybe that's what gives me a very broad musical plate to kind of draw from that I'm not scared to draw from. I mean, a lot of rock artists are scared to draw from other things that they might have a flavor for, you know, but I just, you know, I figured I'm at this stage in my career, at this age, I've done a lot of rock and roll. Let me do something that's really, really genuine. This is the way I wrote songs for El Nino. It's just right. That this is a very stripped down. Maybe it represents where I am today instead of where I was back then. But it's, you know, it's something that's not, it's not foreign to what I've done. And some people may even consider it slightly familiar to things in the past, but I think it's a different approach. You know, I'm not trying to reinvent anything, but it's kind of like a different approach, I guess. It doesn't sound like the way Alice in Chains would do an Unplugged album, even though right. I'm inspired by Alice in Chains Unplugged, you know. It doesn't sound like how, you know, a City in Color album, even though I'm inspired by artists like that as well, you know. So it's just a different way to approach music. And in most of the interviews, I'm kind of like, in trying to figure out when I ask the question, how did you get to that? It, most of it keeps reflecting back to musical curiosity, just being curious as a musician and wanting to play different instruments, wanting to do different things, write in different genres. And obviously my old band was a crossover band. We did heavy and light and rhythmic and, you know, non-rhythmic and staccato and more circular grooves. So it's, we were kind of all over the place. And I think in having done that in rock, making a very fluid acoustic album was important to me. I didn't want to have an all over the thing place, you know?
Right.
You got like a ballad and then this, and then a heavy song and then a moshy song and then a song you don't mosh. I wanted like a very fluid album. I've always admired artists, whether extremely brutal, because I listen to anything from death metal to Sade to instrumental music. So, you know, I've always admired artists that could put together really fluid albums. Not like, here's the one song, this one makes sense, this one doesn't. This one kind of makes sense, this one does, this one doesn't.
Yeah, you definitely don't want to be the guy that puts out the album that one song sounds like this, that song gets popular, people buy the album and are pissed because you've got 12 other tracks that sound nothing like that.
Well, you almost froze up there. Can you still see me?
Yeah, I got you.
Okay. Just making sure. Sometimes the internet over here in rural California does what it wants, you know?
Right. I was scared. We moved to like the rural in Southern Indiana and I was really just worried that I was going to have to get some sort of weird, you know, space satellite internet. Luckily we're still close enough to town.
Yeah. Believe it or not, that's what we're on in this house. We're on satellite internet. It's working.
That's crazy.
Okay. For right now, you know,
looks good. It was looking good. You know, it's funny, and I do think we have actually something very similar, because looking at the El Nino timeline with Mark Rizzo leaving in 2003, did he leave to go to Soulfly, or did he leave and then get Soulfly?
Well, I think the Soulfly gig came natural out of the Roadrunner family. You
know, yeah.
Once Mark left, I imagine Roadrunner passed his name along to Max when he was looking for a guitar player, naturally so. And I mean, he
Well, the reason I bring it up, and I'm not trying to... Yeah, oh, he's an amazing guitar player. The funny thing is I was in Primer 55 in 2003 when Bobby left to play bass in Soulfly. Oh, so God. That's kind of a parallel there.
Interesting, interesting. So you're kind of already in the circle there a little bit.
Yeah, a little bit. I'm a tertiary member of the circle. Actually, we toured one of the last Primer tours I did. Mark opened for us, so as a solo band, his solo band opened.
Oh, okay, his like
the Mark Rizzo band or whatever, yeah,
metal kind of thing, yeah.
Yeah, it was so funny, man. Every day I would I was crawling out to the van from just being hungover, and then Mark would just run by, you know, gym shorts on, looking all buff, and I'm like, I just gave up. I was like, all right, it's too funny, man.
I mean, the touring lifestyle, you know, different people do different things on tour, you know,
right.
And whatever is your thing that makes you feel normal, that's probably what you go into on tour, you know?
Yeah.
And that's why, you know, you got to be careful. If addiction makes you feel normal, then on tour, addiction could be bad, you know, and things like that. But, you know, if working out makes you feel normal on tour, it could just be challenging to do that because you're having to find a gym and things like that, you know? But the people that are dedicated to it, you know, for sure are able to do it nonstop.
Absolutely. Yeah, I went through phases, but I definitely was not in a workout phase at the time. Let's talk about recording this album, because I know it was recorded a little bit differently than most. It was recorded in high definition to be listened to on my phone, by the way. But but you record high definition. How does one record in high definition?
Well, I mean, I think on headphones you could hear the audio file content. You're listening to the HD files, but it was definitely a different recording process than what I'm used to. The first album that I made with El Nino, and before El Nino, you know, I had been making demos and stuff like that on tape. So I was used to recording to tape when I was a developing musician coming up in the scene. And then on digital tape, which was similar. You couldn't edit. You could just punch in and get better takes and punch in little sections and stuff like that. But eventually, you know, I think somewhere around 2005, everything became strictly digital. Tape went away. Everything went into the box, mostly in Pro Tools and stuff like that. And I suppose the multi-tracking world became what it is now, where you get the drummer first, you know, and then you get the bass player, and then you get the guitars, and then you put the vocals on it, and then you come back and you do little guitar overdubs and stuff like that. And that was mostly the formula followed that we know, that we hear on most rock albums, is that formula. But this was done a little bit different. What we played together, we didn't multi-track. There was four microphones used. There was two, a left and a right, in the band room. And then my guitar went in separately and my vocal mic went in separately. So there was four channels that we used to record the whole thing pretty much. And everybody played at once. Everybody performed at once. It was an extremely challenging album to make, but I think that musical curiosity is what makes it interesting as a musician, and what makes you feel like this is challenging, but I have to do this because this is going to teach me new things. It's going to make me be a better musician. It's going to help me understand music better. It's going to help me understand the arrangement better. And it's going to help me understand my ability as a musician better. So it was challenging. I learned a lot. I was extremely inspired by the musicians that played on my album, you know, two of my friends, and Oscar, the percussion, who played in El Nino. And it was different than anything I'd done. We also recorded in the highest sample rate possible, which is what kind of allows us to offer it as an audiophile CD. But overall, I think it was the chemistry of recording live, not multi-tracking, not forcing, but putting the musicians into a room and kind of forcing chemistry until the take was right, you know? And we had David Chesky, who was one of the greatest piano players of our time, in the control room with Jeff Lanier. And, you know, they basically would tell us, you know, that take was good, but do another one. I think that we did about 3 to 5 takes of each song, depending. Some songs we came in the first day, and it took the first day, believe it or not, it took like in the studio, even though we had rehearsed outside the studio, going into the studio and then setting up again and playing together again. It took like 6-7 hours of just playing together for the chemistry of everybody's individual vibe to come into play. So in other words, you know, the bass player had put some passing tones into some of the chord progressions that took a little bit for us to kind of like get our ears used to. And extremely challenging, but it's different. You know, at first I thought, oh, I'm making an acoustic album, it's going to be simple. And when I proposed it to Conrado and Steven, I was like, it's easy. This is easy, man. It's an acoustic album. And then even Conrado and Steven, being amazing guitar players, they realized, dude, acoustic guitar is harder to play than electric guitar. You have to play cleaner. You have to play. You can't make mistakes. Any wrong rubbing of the finger on a string, you hear it. If something's out of tune, you hear it. The distortion doesn't mask anything up, you know? So,
oh yeah,
it was something that I thought was going to be simple. And then we wound up realizing, fuck, this is really harder than we thought it was going to be. And this is as challenging as you could get, is going into studio and saying everyone's going to play acoustic and everyone's going to play at the same time. And there's going to be no multi-tracking, and you just got to do takes until everybody plays it right.
Yeah. And sometimes you can find magic in that too. You know, maybe a mess up actually sounds good. You never know.
For sure. For sure. And there are things on there, like, you know, sometimes tempos shifted and,
oh, those are fun.
There's a couple of notes on there that aren't, you know, exactly on. And there's a couple of guitar things that are a little bit loose. And it's just the way music really is when you put the human element. I think that that's what David and Jeff were almost mostly concerned with, was the human element, you know, make it sound human, make it sound awesome, but have it be real and genuine. A couple of times, you know, we did a take, and on one song, we couldn't get the arrangement right. And we were messing around with removing guitar, putting more guitar, or removing the bass, or does the violin play? Does the violin not play? Remove the percussion, put it back. And then by the time we got to like take 4, I think we had gotten it right. But, you know, David Chesky was just like, well, you guys are sounding good and it sounds great, but because you guys are having to focus so much, you're completely losing the vibe, and, you know, the chemistry's not there. And I guess what chemistry could be defined as is everybody's looseness being in sync with each other. So then when you got all the human elements from each musician, whether they be slight little imperfections and things like that, in sync with each other, then everything makes sense.
I agree with that 100%. Have you been able to play this out live anywhere yet? Or, you know, did you do it pre-pandemic? You know, actually now I think you could probably get into a little jazz club or even a restaurant or something to play. Have you played anything like this yet?
Live? No, other than in my house, but at the studio with the guys when we rehearsed it for the album, stuff like that. I was supposed to have my first live show on September 11th, and I was supposed to start a tour on September 11th. But a couple months back, the tour was supposed to start in Texas, and when we realized that Texas was starting to peak and Texas was in the news and they started closing bars in Texas, my booking agent just said, look, it's just smarter to just move it now. So we moved everything from March 2021 to begin in March 2021. I'll probably start preparing around Christmas, you know, the holiday time. I'll probably start putting rehearsals together. That way by March, I can be ready to go. But I was hoping to be able to go and start in September. You know, it's what we had planned, and just being patient, really, you know. Venues will open, and they'll allow us to play eventually. And if they don't, eventually, once enough people are safe and not getting sick, even musicians and fans might get fed up and be like, "Oh, we don't care. You know, open the venue. You know, promote it."
It's getting close. It's getting very close.
Will
your acoustic shows be completely just the solo material? Or are you planning on, you know, acousticing up any of your old songs that you wrote?
I'm definitely going to do some El Nino songs. I'd say maybe like 4 or 5 El Nino songs. I'm going to do all my originals and also a couple of covers that are not on the album. But I'll do all the covers that are on the album. I'll do, you know, the 2 El Nino songs that are on there. I'm also planning on doing a couple of other El Nino songs, but I want to leave them as a surprise. So at least there's a little bit of element of surprise in there. You know, having one album only, it could be exciting for a fan to come see the show because they can know what every song is going to be and expect to hear all the songs.
Right.
But it could also be like the element of surprise is gone because you know what you're going to hear, you know, and you know that there isn't going to be other songs. So I'm going to try to make it as exciting as possible, you know, and my album is very, very deep and it's definitely dug very deeply dug into emotion and things like that. So in between songs, I want to tell jokes and make people smile.
Right.
Also, you know, in its own heart-wrenching manner, I want people to be able to come into the venue and get this sense of letting go of whatever pain they might have and being able to laugh about the pain as well. And I hope that in me being able to laugh and smile about the suffering, the personal suffering I might have thought I was going through when I wrote those songs, hopefully it'll make people smile and laugh and, you know, make us all focus on the good things that we can share.
Absolutely. Well, speaking of smiling, let me pull this up. Can you explain this album, this magazine cover?
Well, that magazine cover was something that was set up by Roadrunner Records. I remember we got to France. Roadrunner Records set up a back in the day labels before there was internet and before there was everybody had cell phones. Labels used to set up press days. So in other words, you go to your headquarters in whatever country you were in of your record label. And that day we went to the French headquarters of Roadrunner Records. And they set up press days. And this was part of a press day with Hard and Heavy in which they had this idea. And I remember they had this, they came to us with this idea, like, all right, you guys are going to have half open shirts and you're going to have big hands on you and you guys are going to be the Latin lovers. That's what they said. That's what they said to us. And I remember I was like in the middle of a tour and both of us were like, is this really what you want? This is really what you want for the magazine and the label. And, you know, we went along with it. We were just like, okay, I guess this is cool. That's what we said to each other, you know? But, you know, it was definitely, we had to get conned into it a little bit. We weren't sure. And, you know, looking back now, I can at least laugh at it and say, hey, well, at least we did some stupid shit like that, you know, silly things. I don't want to call it stupid, but it's just funny and silly. And there really is no boundaries at that point. And, you know, at that time, we might have felt like, are you sure you want that? This is a little cheesy. And we felt a little cheesy about it. Now looking back, we could just smile and laugh and be like, look at how silly we were.
Well, it's also one of those things where you probably didn't expect it to get anywhere other than like France. So, but you know, kind of pre-internet,
only French people will see this. That's
like no one will ever see that. So we'll just, it's like those actors that used to do, you know, commercials for Coke and, you know, countries figure this now, you know, with the internet, we all.
It was definitely, it was a unique press theme, I guess, you know. They wanted to sell magazines.
Well, it can. Yeah, that sold a few. And it's funny, it kind of goes full circle with, you know, the Latin lover kind of thing with the new album. You know, you're kind of a Latin lover on this one. So there you go.
Well, I mean, the songs are really about obstacles, man.
Yeah.
Life obstacles that I've been through that, you know, I don't want to like push my life on anybody. But unfortunately, the only kind of music I've known is to write about life. You know, I don't think I threw anybody under the bus in my album, but it's a lot about a lot of personal family things and, you know, respect for family. It's about loss of family and having to accept that. It's about having kids and the fear of the world and, you know, wishing I could see my kids more and things like that. You know, it's about a lot of life challenges that I think most people can relate to, but it's really all I've known. You know, I tried before to like write songs about politics or, you know, something else. And it's just, I never feel genuine within it. I've done it. And then I go, yeah, okay. I like it for the moment. And then 2 years later I go, it's not even me. I don't even know what I'm talking about, you know?
Yeah, I mean, that's the exact reason I stepped away from touring was my kids. You know, there was nothing worse than being in, you know, 20 states away and the phones ring in and can't get, you know, nobody can watch the kids and blah, blah, blah. And I'm out there just goofing off in a band, you know? So I'm like, I got to go home. You just got to go home.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, it's tough. The toughest thing I've ever done was going on tour when my kid was born. And I knew that I had to spend 3 months with her every single day. You know, I was as involved as a dad could be. I mean, I was in my kid's face every single day, you know? And when I went away, I definitely felt like it rips a hole out of your heart when you can't see your kid every day, you know? I got used to it as the days went by, the pain became less and less, but you still feel empty, you know?
Yeah. And I think with like things like FaceTime and Skype and everything else, I think it might be a little bit easier, but you know, obviously back when I stopped, it was like 07, 08. So it was barely phone, you know, cell phones at the time.
It's all during those years. It was complicated. If you had family, dude, forget about it. Sure. I mean, relationships would end within a matter of 2 days because like a girlfriend can't get in touch with you. And then she's like dumping you because, you know, there is no way to reach people when you're in the middle of nowhere.
Yeah. Phone cards and pay phones and truck stops. And yeah, it was a mess, man.
Fuck. Did you lose me? Okay. Hold on. Let me, Alexa, shut off. Don't try that.
Yeah. Well, cool. I was actually
isn't it great technology?
Yeah, it's an insane technology.
She's recording the interview for us right now.
Oh, nice.
She's gonna send the file over.
Can she edit it for me too?
She'll edit it for you.
that'll be the day. Well, Christian, man, I'm gonna wrap it up on this, man. You know, the new album's out September 25th, Hollywood East Sycamore. And man, it was a pleasure having you on. It was a pleasure listening to the album over the last few days and just getting really deep into it, man. It was really great to talk to you.
Thank you for having me on, man. And thank you for giving the album a spin. And September 25th, if anybody's out there, go check it out. You could find me, Christian Machado. I think I might be the only guy with that name playing songs. I'm not sure, but. Find me. Thank you.
I do believe so. All right, man. Thank you.
Right on, man. Have a good one.
On the stage.
thank you to Christian for taking the time. Make sure you're heading over to YouTube, checking out the video version of this interview, and also subscribing over on YouTube. Make sure you're checking out the live Talk To Me's on Tuesday nights. You can always, it's a nice family affair over there. We get to hang out. You get to comment. Those comments pop up on the screen. You can ask the guests questions that way. Interactive Talk To Me live, YouTube, Facebook. And make sure you are subscribing to the YouTube page and leaving a nice 5-star rating, 5-star review on the iTunes page. That will be much appreciated. And until next week, with the 5-year anniversary special of Talk To Me, with a special guest that is yet to be recorded, but it is on the books. So as soon as I get that interview done, I will post about it and a special announcement. So make sure to stick around for that. So for the Talk To Me podcast, I've been Joshua Toomey, and I will talk to you guys soon.